Good morning and welcome to Jewish Faith and Jewish Facts. I'm Rabbi Stephen Garten speaking to you from Ottawa, Canada. This week, we continue our exploration of the weekly portions known in Hebrew as the Parashiot that are offered from the book of Leviticus. The book of Leviticus, the third book in the Hebrew Bible known as Torah, known in Hebrew as Vayikra, from the first or second word of the book, meaning, and God called. This week's parasha begins in Leviticus 12 and continues through the chapter 13. And the title is Tazria. The translation of that word Tazria will be part of our conversation with our guest who will help us unpack one of the more challenging Torah portions in not only the book of Leviticus, but the entire five books. The parasha of Tazria continues a conversation that began last week on the laws of Tumah v'Tahara, ritual impurity and ritual purity. Perhaps more to be explored about ritual purity and impurity. Now, it tells us that a woman giving birth should undergo a process of purification, which includes immersing in a mikveh, a naturally gathered pool of water, and bringing offerings to the holy temple. All male infants are to be circumcised on the eighth day of life, which is not a new commandment. Even Abraham in the first book, Genesis, Bereshit, is commanded as a sign of covenant that all males shall be circumcised on the eighth day. And then we find the root of the title of our parasha. We're told that Tazarat, and here it's often mistranslated as leprosy, is a supernatural plague which can afflict people as well as garments or homes. If white or pink patches appear on a person's skin, or dark red or green patches appear in garments, a high priest, a Kohen, is summoned, and judging by various signs, such as the increase in the size of afflicted areas after a seven-day quarantine, the Kohen pronounces it tameh, impure, or tahor, pure. A person afflicted with Tazarat must dwell alone outside the camp, chutz l'machaneh, until it is healed. The afflicted area in a garment or home must be removed, and if the Tazarat reoccurs, the entire garment or home must be destroyed. This is a parasha that puzzles many. Is it talking about a real illness? Is it talking about some sort of disease that we no longer experience? Or if, as the Torah portion alludes to, it's talking about ritual purity and ritual impurity, is this week's Torah portion an allegory for the notion of purity? With me this morning is one of the most insightful members of the rabbinic class. Rabbi Mark H. Levin is a native of Baltimore, Maryland. He graduated from Boston University, magna cum laude, with distinction in religion. And he received a master's of art and his certificate of Jewish communal studies from Hebrew Union College, where he was also ordained as a rabbi. He also completed his doctorate of Hebrew letters through Hebrew Union College Jewish Institute of New York and received an honorary doctor of divinity. He has been a pulpit rabbi for Congregation Beth Torah outside of Kansas City, Missouri, and was the founding rabbi of that congregation in 1988 until his retirement in June of 2014. And at that moment, he accepted the position of founding rabbi of Congregation Beth Torah. It's a joy to welcome him back to Jewish Faith and Jewish Facts. Rabbi Levin, good morning.
Rabbi, so great to see you again. It's wonderful to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
Well, I know that our listeners are very pleased with the insights that you bring to the Torah. And so let's begin. What is this all about?
Well, thank you for that wonderful introduction. And I think in order to understand Tazria, which is translated when a woman gives birth or when a woman conceives, and as you say in your really wonderful introduction, it's very hard for us to understand. And it goes on to skin diseases, which are a matter of purity. And we have to ask ourselves the question, then what is ritual purity? But in order to really comprehend this, we have to look at the entirety of the book of Leviticus. Leviticus is about the human endeavor to try to have a relationship with God. We say that God is holy, meaning God is special, God is set apart. And as in Leviticus, with coming up in a couple of weeks, Leviticus 19:2, you shall be holy, for I, the Lord your God, am holy. And then in great detail, the book of Leviticus takes human activity and says to us, okay, how do we live a holy life? What does that mean? It means you live a physical life. Everyone knows how to live a physical life. We do that naturally in order simply to preserve ourselves. But then we have an aspiration for something greater, something that will lift us up. If I may, something that gives meaning and purpose to life. And we believe that we can have a relationship with the creator of all the universe, with the creator of the world, a being that put us here for a purpose. And so the book of Leviticus is really dedicated to that. The first five chapters about sacrifices, many people find to be inscrutable, but in point of fact, the sacrifices are about, if you have gratitude to God for all that God has done to you, what do you then give back? Today we give back prayer. Today we may also do altruistic things for other human beings in God's name. We may build magnificent chapels. Okay? All this is in God's name, to give back for all that God has done to us, just as an example. Well, in chapter 11, we see that people eat things. So can that help to make us holy? Well, the Bible gets it that there are certain things that are holy to eat and certain things that are not. But we have to look at the human aspiration to be close to God.
And using that term, we should remind our listeners that the Hebrew for sacrifice is korbanot, and that the root, three Hebrew root letters that form the noun korbanot, come from karov, to come close.
To come close. Absence to sacrifice is to come close to God. So to get to our parashah, to our particular Torah portion, what could be more powerful in the human experience than to sire a child and to give birth to a child? Okay? And part of this is blood. Blood in the Bible is the manifestation, the essence of life. So it's both holy in a certain sense and also makes unholy. Why? Because spilling blood is generally against the biblical commandment, and blood has power in the biblical perception. So here we begin with the idea of the birth of a child, and what does that do for a woman? Interestingly, it both brings her closer to God and farther away, so she has to ultimately bring a sin sacrifice. But let's go on to the skin diseases.
Well, I just want to finish that circle of thought.
Very good.
That for most of us who've experienced the birth of our child or a grandchild, we know that there's the spilling of blood when the woman gives birth. It's very unusual that there's not. So we see the physical manifestation of what you're saying, that the birth of a child is a miraculous event that we take joy in, but through the delivery, there is the shedding of blood. And at the exact same time, at the exact same notion of the parashah, we're told that infants also should shed blood through the circumcision.
Exactly.
So that blood itself becomes both something that is impure, but that can be made pure.
And it can make us pure. In other words, the circumcision is a blood covenant. Without blood, specifically in the cutting, because today it would be possible to do the circumcision and not shed a drop of blood. But that's not permitted in Jewish law. There has to be, because of the power. But let's go back to the experience of giving birth. If you talk to anyone, and I've done this many times in my career, and said, what is the most powerful experience in your life? when have you known the presence of God? It is most often, at least in the people I've spoken to, when they have a child. Because giving birth and the legacy and the perpetuation of life into another generation, the mystery of life is overwhelming. You see the same thing in deaths, by the way. You see the people who've been present at the death of someone else will say the mystery that I have just witnessed is inexplicable and overwhelmingly powerful. So both birth and death say something about the power of life, which then in the human experience turns us towards God. What put us here and what is the purpose of all of this?
As God is the creator in the book of Genesis, when we, male and female, follow the pattern of God and create, we come closest to emulating the power of creation.
Exactly.
Namely, the power that God manifests, that the divine manifests in the book of Genesis in the very first and chapter and half of the second chapter before we get to the story of Noah. So we begin our parasha with the power of blood and the power of human creation. And I guess we should acknowledge that blood is something that manifests from the human being, some sort of overflow. It's necessary for life, but it also has impact when blood doesn't work properly. And then we go to this notion of an affliction of some sort.
Yes, and prior to modern medicine, people thought of medical conditions as having a spiritual component. Very often people would say, you know, what have I done wrong? Like I committed some sin in order to get this terrible affliction. But here the idea in the Bible is that somehow the human condition has to do with our relationship with God. So we've worldwide just been through COVID. One of the things about COVID was wearing a mask. And another thing about COVID was putting certain people at a distance from us. So we see in next week's parasha, we're going to see that certain people who had certain skin diseases were put outside the camp. Now that's another affliction. Why were they put outside the camp? They were put outside the camp in all likelihood to prevent contamination, to prevent the spread of the disease. Well, we just went through this. And I think a question that we have to ask, a spiritual question that came up worldwide is, what does it mean to separate ourselves from others? What does it mean to put certain people outside of the camp? Even in terms of long COVID, what does it mean to say to people, you know what? You have this, we got over it. You have this manifestation that is going on. Now, do we intervene in those people's lives? Do we bring them into the community, or do we leave them outside of the community as the leper was left outside of the community and sacrificed for the welfare of the community? This is a major spiritual issue in our own time, not with leprosy specifically, not with skin diseases specifically, but a plague as leprosy was a plague in the ancient world.
And it continues to be both a spiritual and an ethical issue. We are now a year or two down the path from when COVID is no longer deemed a worldwide plague, but we still ask questions about whether the isolation of children from school or whether employers had a right to isolate individuals from the workplace. These continue to be important questions as we wrestle with singular human rights and the community's right to exist in a healthy manner. The Torah portion seems to be very clear that the community has rights that supersede the individual. The individual is a danger at times to the community.
And when the individual is a danger, we see in the book of Leviticus, then that person, at personal sacrifice to the whole community, at personal sacrifice to the whole community, of necessity, in order not to afflict the community further, that person must be isolated. But then the question becomes, what becomes our responsibility? And it's interesting that you said the ritual, I believe you said the ritual and the ethical, as if there's a division between the two. When we get to Leviticus 19 and the list of the ethical and ritual that are line after line intermingled, we see that the Bible doesn't necessarily make that separation. We see that this human experience of illness is an ethical, spiritual challenge to us. How do we remain close to God? The overall question of the book of Leviticus, the question of holiness, how do we remain close to God in the light of these things that occur during life? Birth in this Torah portion, but also illness. And what does that say about distance? I believe personally that distance is an ethical and spiritual and ritual challenge. Okay, so how do you put someone outside of the camp? Do you have a ritual which says, you know what, we don't want to do this, but we're compelled, but we will maintain our contact in every possible way so that you are not isolated from us and from God? Or do we simply say, you know what, you don't matter anymore, you're an affliction, goodbye?
And I suppose if you're asking the question of whether there's a ritual that one uses to express the ambivalence of the community and isolating somebody, there must be a ritual to acknowledge bringing the person back into the community.
Exactly. Exactly right. And the priest in the Bible, the priest would go and visit the person and examine and see whether the person had sarat, whatever that is. It's translated as leprosy. We know it's not leprosy. We know it's not now. I've blanked on the actual name of the disease.
Well, you usually Hansen's disease.
Hansen's disease. There we go. So it's not Hansen's, but it is a skin affliction.
Right.
Right. And this does occur naturally. So I want to point to masks as a ritual. Okay. And I want to point to hand washing as a ritual. Okay. Why are these things rituals? Because we did them automatically, but also they pointed to a greater concern for community and self and our place within the community. Now, Passover is coming up in just a couple of weeks. There are three times during the Seder that traditionally Jews would wash. The first time is a purity issue in terms of the dirt on your hands. The second time is a ritual, because your hands are already clean. You haven't gone anywhere, right? The second time is a ritual purity action in which there is a blessing. I'm asserting that the same thing was the case with COVID, in which we were actually engaging in a ritual which had a higher meaning, our regard for others, our regard for community, and frankly, our regard for God. Did God send some sort of an affliction? Some people had it as, this is an affliction sent to us because of our sins. Other people looked at it and said, no, this is a challenge to our humanity. I actually published an article at the very beginning of COVID in the local newspaper that said, here we have a worldwide affliction, rich and poor, all nations, all races. Let's rise to the occasion. I'm afraid nobody listened.
Well, perhaps more people listened, but the people who listened didn't have the kind of voice that could be heard in response.
Okay, I will accept it.
That ritualizing, hand washing, and masking as it was done during COVID did make a statement that the community came first. And of course, throughout the world, there were people who challenged that. There were people who could not see the ritualization of behavior as anything other than a denial of their human, individual, inalienable rights, as American founding documents say it. But in our Torah portion, it's understood that the survival of the community, the survival of the chosen people, that the survival of the Am Kedushah, the holy people, requires a ceding of individual freedoms for the benefit of God's presence in the community. And that's a powerful message.
That is a powerful message. And I take it a little bit differently, that the individual seeing his, I'm not a person who emphasizes individualism. I'm a community guy. I don't think we're really individuals. Okay. In this regard, I'm different from many people. I believe we're actually in our very core part of a community. And we have regard for the community because the community is the basis of our survival. But we have responsibilities to the community, and the community has responsibilities to us. So in this idea of holiness, the individual has to say, if I'm a threat to the community, what is my responsibility? And the community simultaneously have to say, if an individual is a threat to the existence of the community, what is our continuing responsibility to that individual, such that the individual is not cut off, because then their humanity is cut off and their holiness, their sense of God, their God being in the community can be threatened.
Well, I suppose that's why the priesthood is chosen to be the determinant of pure ritual purity and ritual impurity. That placing the priest in this central role, which we might have thought would have been assigned to some other individual who was called a healer or a medical professional, this gives us insight that the Torah portion is not simply talking about health.
Exactly right. Exactly right. And we've already had a couple of chapters earlier. In the eighth chapter, we have that the high priest is dressed in his priestly garments and his sons as well, but the high priest is what is emphasized. Why? Because a normal human being, a person born of man, male and female, okay, is elevated to this position, this exalted position of having a special responsibility, but he puts on his priestly garments, because when we put on the garment of responsibility, then our existence matters less than the existence of the community, and we have a role to play to maintain God in the community. And then when you take off the garment, okay, so you can worry more about yourself.
I love that that description, garment of responsibility. It is not the common phrase that's used to describe the costume or uniform of the high priest. Usually, when we speak of the high priest dressing, we say, this is a symbol of the high priest's unique status, that we dress the high priest in garb that separates the high priest from the rest of the community. But when you call it the garment of responsibility, it transposes that not to separate the high priest from the community, but in fact to immerse the high priest within the community.
Exactly right. The high priest then becomes the exemplar of the community, as clergy are to be exemplars of the community. So people sometimes take their exalted status when they're appointed by the community to have a particular function. They take it as being singled out for a greater privilege, but that's not it at all. You are singled out for greater responsibility because you have the ability to handle the responsibility, and therefore give up some of your individuality and some of and have to relinquish your selfishness in order to be of service to the multitude. And that's what that's what ordination is about. Ordination for clergy is to say, okay, now you are the responsible person in the community. We're awfully sorry about this, but guess what? From now on, the welfare of the community comes before yours.
And I suppose that's how we understand the 7 days of ordination that was called for in the Torah, that the priesthood underwent 7 full days of education about their responsibility. And the Torah portion known as Shmini,
right,
was the Torah portion that said, on the 8th day, you now have theoretically internalized what your responsibilities are, and you should be ready to serve the Jewish people. And I suppose you're alluding to, and perhaps I'm reading too much into it, but in that Torah portion, when the high priest Aaron's sons, Nadab and Avihu, bring strange fire, it's almost following your logic. It's almost as if they forgot.
Yes.
They didn't know what the job was.
Yes.
It was not about them.
Exactly right. So you can't drink. I mean, that's the example there. And the rabbis in the Talmud said, what's their sin? They were drunk and offering the sacrifice. Well, what's the problem with that? Okay. Well, it's the same thing as getting a DUI, frankly. You know, you've relinquished your responsibility to the community and you're driving, and you need to accept your punishment. I want to get back and emphasize one thing here. We see in this Torah portion that every person has the capacity, the innate capacity, not only born in, but must be accepted for holiness in the community. And when an affliction comes, it doesn't remove you automatically from the community. No, but then you have a responsibility to the community, and this mutual responsibility emphasizes the holiness of the individual within the holiness of the community and the group responsibility and representation before God. So someone should not think about their illness, and you and I are of an age in which everybody we know has got something. Okay? So that should not remove us from the community, nor make us think that somehow we are being punished. Rather, this is a special category in the community of those who have a responsibility, have a little bit of wisdom, maybe a greater amount to share with the community, but also have a disability that when it is a threat, the community needs to take note of what to do to both protect the community and include the individual.
You know, usually this Torah portion known as Tazria focuses on the messiness of childbirth. And people ask loads and loads of questions about why the giving birth of a child should make the mother impure, and why the mother should be afflicted with 7 days of isolation, and why it doesn't make it sound as natural a phenomenon as childbirth is. But our conversation this morning has alluded to a deeper meaning within the Torah portion, which I'm hopeful that our listeners have been able to discern, that this is not about yuckiness of life. This is about the sanctity of life. My guest this morning has been Rabbi Mark H. Levin, the founding rabbi of Congregation Beth Torah, outside of Kansas City, Missouri. You can hear our conversation on CHRI 99.1 FM, or you can hear it as a podcast on the chri.ca website, or you can download it as a podcast wherever you get your favorite podcasts. I want to thank Rabbi Levin for sharing his insight and wisdom with you and with me. And for Jewish Faith and Jewish Facts, I'm Rabbi Stephen Garten, wishing you a good day and shalom.